going to start out with a subject that I imagine you will not hear often discussed on Christian radio. Every once in a while, they'll touch upon it. Not always in the healthiest of ways, I should say. The subject of mental illness. It seems to be commonly assumed among Christians that if we're going to discuss this, it needs to be discussed very carefully. And that's a good idea, but there are a lot of assumptions among Christians. Assumptions that, oddly enough, non-Christians do not entertain about mental illness. That it's a sign of weak faith or a real spiritual problem at its root. Are these things true? We will find out in the course of this first hour of Issues, Etc. Linda Preuss joins me here in Studio A. We'll begin our conversation in just a moment. She's a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. Now, if you'd like to join us during this first hour and the hours that follow, our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And given the sensitive nature of the subject matter, we always do invite people who wish to call in anonymously. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Gene Edward Veith joins us. He's author of Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for May. It is the 1st of May, after all. The Spirituality of the Cross is the book. We'll be talking to him about Scripture's doctrine of justification. In the second part of that second hour, Gretchen Passantino joins us. It was night before last on Dateline NBC that Madonna appeared talking about her preference in spirituality. She called it Kabbalah. We'll find out what it is with Gretchen Passantino in the second hour of the program. Gretchen is from Answers in Action, based in Costa Mesa, California. And then the third hour of Issues, Etc. is open lines for your questions and your comments. We will hear on this National Day of Prayer from evangelist Luis Palau. He gave a prayer at the National Day of Prayer. We'll hear a little bit of it and his explanation of why he said it the way he said it. For us Christians, in the name of Jesus. We'll find out why he said it that way, and we'll get your reaction as well in the third hour of Issues, Etc. Open lines for your questions and your comments. I also have a few other things to share with you during open lines on the occasion of the National Day of Prayer. Linda Preuss is a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. She also leads a support group every second Thursday of the month at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere, Missouri. Linda, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much.
Linda, is mental illness a sign of weak faith on the part of a Christian?
No. With the research that we have been doing into the brain, we are finding more and more that severe mental illness is actually a medical condition. That is structural abnormality or chemical imbalance within the brain. And so, you know, the methods for treating people with serious mental illness are going through dramatic revision. And it's really life-changing for the people that are involved and affected by this.
As someone who, your own life has been, through a relative, been touched by mental illness, naturally there is going to come that kind of nagging question, especially on the part of a Christian, that this is a sign or a punishment or some sort of signal of failure there. Is that true for Christians who have their lives touched by mental illness?
No. Mental illness is a disorder in the physical organ known as the brain. For many years, somehow we felt like the brain was the only thing that wouldn't be touched. But it's filled with billions of cells and hundreds of neurotransmitters, all of which are very complicated in the way they work. And so now we're finding that indeed these complex behaviors really are the product of a lot of neurotransmitters. And what happens is that a young person, as their brain matures, it becomes clear that they don't have all of the aspects developing in their brain like they should. And the way this becomes clear is because there are very discernible, mental illness has very discernible symptoms that are charted by a psychiatrist from five different areas. And it's a diagnosis that is given out carefully by competent medical help. And today there are excellent medications that can help correct the imbalances and things that are wrong in the brain and help people get back to a normal functioning.
What is commonly meant by mental illness?
Mental illness, we just use that term to describe when people suffer such severe distress that their relationships and their lives are really completely torn apart. For instance, a person that has an illness such as schizophrenia, that is not a split personality. They're not Harry one day and Joe the next. What happens to them is that their brain tells them that the world works in a different way than normally is perceived. For instance, their brain tells them that people talk to them from outer space. They have what's called impaired gating, where they cannot screen out all of the noise that goes on in the around us in the world. And so they're competing with a lot of unwanted information, in addition to the fact that they may be hearing voices and noises within their brain. So it makes them it very difficult for them to really concentrate on what is actually happening in reality.
The term mental illness also covers, of course, a wide spectrum. You mentioned schizophrenia. There are also other very common forms like bipolar disorder, sometimes also confused with depression. Tell us about those very briefly.
Bipolar used to be called manic depression. And it's what happens is a person will go through long periods of feeling depressed, and then suddenly their mood will start to elevate, and they'll start to feel more energetic. But what happens is they can move from feeling better into going into periods of delusion, periods of hyperactivity. They don't sleep all night. They stop eating. Their judgment becomes poor, so they spend thousands of dollars. They have hypersexuality. They can be irritable and rude. And so the mood switches dramatically. And they are become in such a high pace that literally they can just burn themselves up in activity.
Is it your sense that with these things that are very common, there are others that we haven't mentioned, like panic, anxiety disorders, things that are very common, and my sense is even among Christians, is it your sense that Christians are largely ignorant, unless their lives have been touched by mental illness, about these things?
Yes, I do think that. I think that I know that up until 5 years ago, I was still working from the old model that if something was wrong, of a behavioral nature, there must have been something that the family or I did wrong in raising children or in our belief system even. It's a tremendous spiritual crisis. And when we understand that mental illness is kind of like diabetes, in diabetes you don't have enough insulin to help take care of your sugar. Mental illness, people don't have the correct amount of brain chemicals to take care of some of the important complex behaviors we need to take care of.
Was there a time when you, as you say, still working from the old model, where you did ask yourself or ask God, why me? Why is my life touched by this?
Right. Oh, definitely. In fact, it brought me to questioning the whole basis of my faith, period. At that point, secular humanism, where you just die and that's it, and there is no God, became possibly an explanation for existence.
So this in your life seemed to be out of joint with everything around you that it was a crisis of faith.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
What made the difference?
The difference made is because an outside person recommended getting to a hospital and getting help. And the people at the hospital were able to give us a diagnosis and pointed me to the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. And at that point, I became educated about the newest and the latest research into the brain, the medical symptoms of mental illnesses, and the treatments that are available, the medications and treatments. And getting involved then as a family and becoming knowledgeable and educated about these was just life-changing.
Perhaps one of the things that that parents fear the most with regard to their kids is any kind of illness, period.
Right.
Any kind of illness, especially those serious ones. But by and large, when the kids get sick ordinarily, we give them some medicine, and in some time, they get over it. If they break a bone, they heal. If they're in an accident, the scars may remain, but the injuries go away. But with mental illness, there's not always a guarantee that there's going to be a complete recovery. What is it like to live with that?
Well, that's where the knowledge is so very important, and that we need to understand what the symptoms of the illness are, because we can then effectively communicate better when we understand what the person themselves is going through. And getting involved in understanding what the medications do is so important, because this is constantly you need to be reassured, and you need to be under good medical care and good support, knowledgeable support. So it's just really a lifelong, you know, it changes your life.
Puts me in mind of the Bible passage where Paul is talking about his thorn in the flesh,
mm-hmm.
where he begs with God to take it away, but God says, no, my strength is made perfect in weakness, and he lets Paul live with it. Is that, in a sense, how it is to live with someone touched by mental illness?
Well, I think in this day and age, we can be more hopeful than that, because untreated mental illness results in people being homeless and families being completely torn apart. When you have a person who is being treated for their mental illness, it's an entirely different picture. You're able to restore that person to healthy family relationships. They are again able to get retraining for jobs and live happy and productive lives. And as long as we understand the limitations of what of the illnesses and the side effects of medication, I mean, there's so much to be thankful for that this is truly, it's a great age to be living in because of the new research.
There was a time, Linda, when not because of people's ignorance, but because of the lack of technology and medical care, when there was no hope for that, was there?
Right. 50 years ago, at the state hospital on Arsenal Street, people were chained to chairs all day long, and they used a hose. The chair had a hole in the bottom of it so that they could just come down and wash off all their bodily waste. They spent from 8 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night chained to chairs. It's just incredibly inhumane treatment.
The same people with the same illnesses today, through the proper treatment and medication, can lead normal lives?
They can lead much more normal lives. I mean, the prognosis for everyone, it's not necessarily going back again and working a full-time job. But the situation is that we have such clear understandings of what is going on, and so the blame and the stigma is really being erased. And so while everyone may not be able to, you know, own their own home or live in it by themselves, the prognosis is just so much more hopeful.
We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Linda Preuss is our guest. She's a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. She also leads a support group every second Thursday of the month at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere, Missouri. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's take a phone call here early in our conversation. Jane is calling from her car. Hi, Jane. Welcome to Issues Etc.
How are you? As we speak, my son-in-law has injured my mother today, and he is mentally ill. He's schizocompulsive is a new diagnosis. He's obsessive compulsive, also bipolar, everything in the book just about. 20 years he's almost had it, been, you know, under medication, but I wanted to know what the word schizo means, and I want to know, the last time he kicked me was the last that we had an incident like this, and they said that he could not be committed unless he did it himself. Is that right?
Thank you for the question, Jane. Linda.
Schizo means that a person has a thought disorder. Schizophrenia is when the person does not perceive the world as working in the same way as we do, whereas bipolar is a mood disorder. Schizophrenia has more to do with the thoughts. And so that's why a lot of times people have, bad thoughts, and as if people are going to hurt them. And so a lot of times when they do react in this way, it's because they're afraid. It's true that when a person goes over the age of 21, that they themselves a lot of times need to commit themselves unless they are a danger to themselves or to others. And that's the key, you know, trying to prove that they are in truth a danger to themselves and to others. Some hospitals are better than others at taking a lesser standard because they are starting to recognize that a person is not always aware of their mental disability and will not always see the need for committing themselves.
So in other words, in answer to Jane's question, if the person in question is over 21, it may be a little more complicated to have someone hospitalized and even for observation or something like
that. Yes, you can do what's called an involuntary commitment, where you bring the person to a hospital, and if there's enough evidence, they can hold them for 4 days, I believe it is, for observation. And then after that time, if they haven't been able to stabilize them and have not they don't agree to a treatment, then you can go to court and have them involuntarily committed for a longer period of time.
Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. As I mentioned before, if you wish to call in anonymously, we will certainly honor your request in that regard as well. Kathy's calling from St. Charles. Kathy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi. I appreciate you taking my call, and I appreciate you having this guest on. And I think this subject is not addressed enough in our Christian community. I know you were mentioning schizophrenia. I do know I have a little boy who is autistic, and I had been reading that they use some of the same medications for autism as they do for schizophrenia, and I have another question, too. And what is the connection? Why do they do that?
That's a good question. Thank you very much. Autism and schizophrenia are the same drugs. Do you have an answer for that?
I'm sorry, I don't. I mean, typically the drugs for schizophrenia are antipsychotic drugs, where a person, it helps quiet voices and internal noises and helps a person understand that some of their delusions, while they may still feel them, are not real.
Could it have something to, and I'm speculating here, but could it have something to do with the fact that some drugs treat the root cause and some simply treat symptoms? In other words, mask symptoms, and therefore if symptoms are similar between autism and schizophrenia, for example, they could be masked by the same medication.
I'm not sure. I mean, there are overlap in some of these illnesses, which is why the caller before said that they have been diagnosed with any number of things. There is overlap. But this points to the importance, really, of being familiar with the medications and what they're doing. So I'd encourage you to pursue that.
Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And I think Kathy had a second question, but she might have to call us back with that second question. If you're getting a busy signal, by the way, please keep calling because we'll get to the phones as quickly as we can. We do have a full board right now. We have a caller on the line. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, I live in St. Louis, and I have a question. I was diagnosed with schizophrenia some years back, and I asked my doctor, I said, can I overcome this? And he said, yes. He said to get my feelings out and to get around people. I have also been diagnosed later, and my doctor sent me to another doctor to be evaluated, and he said, no, I don't think you have schizophrenia. I think it's not that. It's something else, and I was put on Depakote, so I'd like to get your opinion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Two things in her call. First of all, is it common, what her story, to be diagnosed and then someone says no, maybe not? How certain are the diagnoses in this case?
Well, I think because of the, they are getting better, okay, but we are still in the throes. For a doctor to tell you you have schizophrenia and it will be solved by you getting your feelings shows that he is not, frankly, educated on what schizophrenia truly is. A person does not have control over what their brain is telling them, and getting their feelings out does not solve schizophrenia.
At the same time, it does raise the question of isolation. In the cases of bona fide mental illness, is that one of the side effects of having the disease?
Yes. People with schizophrenia are very often very withdrawn and isolated because they are concentrating so much on all of the information and noise inside of their head. And so it is very helpful when they are able to, you know, break through that with the help of medicine and connect more with people. They are often very emotionally flat and don't show their emotions much, which may lead people to misunderstand and think they don't have emotions. They do have emotions. It's just that they may not be visible on their face.
Before we go to this break, let's see if we can fit another call in here from St. Louis. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, I was calling because my daughter has been diagnosed with a psychotic disorder. They won't specify more than that. She's only 12, and they said they don't want to diagnose her with something as specific as schizophrenia or something until she's older. But she started hearing voices when she was 10, and she perceived it as the devil telling her what to do. And she started acting very erratically, and especially when
being told by authority figures to do things, simple things like, you know, change your clothes, clean up your room. She would kick and hit and scream and bite because the voices in her head were telling her she was being threatened. You know, her life was being threatened. She's now in a residential facility and probably will be for the rest of her growing up years. And it's very hard for me to deal with, and I'm dealing with a lot of guilt because
right.
I keep asking myself, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for the call. Linda, some words for her before we go to this break. We've got about a minute and a half here before we go.
Yeah, the guilt is the hardest thing to overcome, but I can only, and I would suggest that you contact the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. They're going to give the phone number because there's a family-to-family class that's 12 weeks long, and they have shorter things that will help educate you on what is going on and will help alleviate that guilt and give you the power and the knowledge to really deal more effectively with the illness and communicate better. And I'd highly recommend that you look into trying to get involved in that.
And we will be giving that to you in just in a second. It sparks a thought, and that is we spoke earlier about isolation. The isolation not only of the person who suffers from mental illness, but the family as well can be isolated from the world around them, thinking I'm the only one who's going through this, or I'm the only one who's suffering through this kind of a thing, and that simply is not true. We're talking about Christians and mental illness during this hour of Issues, Etc. Linda Preuss is our guest. She's a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. You can contact them here in St. Louis at area code 314-966-4670. That's 966-4670, or you can check out their website. It's namistl.org, namistl.org. We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Now, when we come back, we'll spend some time talking about not only this isolation, but also the church and the pastor, how important it is. We have about 30 seconds here. Do you think the church is largely ignorant on this issue of mental illness, Linda?
Yes, I do. And it's unfortunate that we've had a century of Freud and Freudian-like thinking. But hopefully that will be changing, that more people will be understanding that these really are medical conditions that need medical treatment, and then acting appropriately with the gospel instead of law.
Well, let's talk about that. First of all, what does it mean if the church has been believing some of the Freudian misconceptions about mental illness, and what does the church have to offer that no psychiatrist, no psychologist can give? They can treat with drugs or with therapy. However, the church has something that is far better. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, why is it important that pastors be informed? Well, maybe the best answer to that begins with the fact that their people suffer with this. We'll be right back.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Can God effect a spiritual change through a physical means? Can God's spoken word, holy baptism, and the Lord's Supper really deliver the benefits of Jesus' death and resurrection? How can these concrete means of grace be the center of one's spiritual life? The answers to these questions are found in the new Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May, The Spirituality of the Cross by Dr. Gene Edward Veith. You can order The Spirituality of the Cross online at issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section and you'll find information on this book. issuesetc.org. Or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Now this Global Minute focuses prayer on special mothers in India who are offering Christ's hope to hurting children. A woman listens to a girl asking why her mother and father died. She cries and the woman turns the girl's attention to Jesus Christ, showing her a personal God who loves her the way Hindu idols can't. In India, there's a ministry called Ramabai Mukti Mission where children who have lost their parents and suffer from medical problems or hopeless poverty can find a loving home. They have house mothers or matron mothers who pray for each girl and encourage them. The homes at Mukti have names of flowers like the Bougainvillea family or Violet family. As you observe Mother's Day this month, please pray for the matron mothers who changed lives at Mukti. Read about these remarkable women with a free copy of Mukti magazine. Call 1-800-268-0461. That's 1-800-268-0461.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. By act of Congress and presidential proclamation, today is a national day of prayer. This prayer from the Book of Common Prayer. Almighty God, who hast given us this good land for our heritage, we humbly beseech thee that we may always prove ourselves a people mindful of thy favor and glad to do thy will. Bless our land with honorable industry, sound learning, and pure manners. Save us from violence, discord, and confusion, from pride and arrogance, and from every evil way. Defend our liberties, and fashion into one united people the multitudes brought hither out of many kindreds and tongues. Endue with the spirit of wisdom those to whom, in thy name, we entrust the authority of government, that there may be justice and peace at home, and that through obedience to thy law we may show forth thy praise among the nations of the earth. In the time of prosperity, fill our hearts with thankfulness, and in the day of trouble, suffer not our trust in thee to fail, all which we ask through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. I'm Dale Meyer.
Sign on at 6:30 tomorrow morning. Wake up with inspiration, information, and your dynamic duo on a Friday. Hi, this is Paul Clayton. Joining me will be Mr. Larry Carter. We'll also hear words of encouragement from Marty Linfeb, commentary from Dr. Dale Meyer, and devotional thoughts from Pastor Todd Wilkin. Plus, we'll give you the answer to the AM 850 KFUO Daily Bible Quiz Friday on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tomorrow on the program, a two-hour discussion on understanding the end times. Dr. Kim Riddlebarger of the White Horse Inn will be our guest. Also, the sanctity of human life. Dr. Ray Hartwig, Secretary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be our guest to talk about that tomorrow on Issues Etc. The subject for this hour, for the next 25 minutes, Christians and mental illness. Linda Preuss is our guest. Now, I mentioned before the break, the National Association for the Alliance of the Mentally Ill. They're going to have a walk coming up on May the 10th. Now, if you'd like to make a donation to pledge for this walk, I would highly recommend that you do. You can call the National Association for the Mentally Ill of St. Louis at area code 314-966-4670. That's 314-966-4670. Jeff, my producer, and I have already pledged for Linda in the walk, and I encourage you to do the same. Call the National Association for the Mentally Ill of St. Louis, 314-966-4670. Join us in supporting this cause. Linda, let's talk a little bit about the church. You mentioned before the break the church is still ignorant, and you mentioned that there is a Freudian way of looking at these things that has prevailed for about 100 years. Why is that a bad thing?
Well, because it tended to blame families and mothers for problems in their children, and family dysfunction as causing mental illness. And actually, it really is the other way around. It can be the other way around, that a perfectly loving, normal family is thrown into dysfunction by the behavior that is exhibited in severe mental illness. And so until they get outside help and treatment, the family can appear to be quite dysfunctional when really they're dealing with the trauma that they don't know. There are not easy answers.
So in other words, what people looking in from the outside have misinterpreted the dysfunction caused by mental illness in a family for a dysfunction that has caused mental illness in the family.
Well, no, it's the a person who has mental illness is causing the family mm-hmm. to go into dysfunction.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. With a better understanding of mental illness, what is the most important set of things for the church, and in particular for a Christian pastor, to know about mental illness in general?
Well, I think the most wonderful thing that we have as Lutherans is that we understand the nature of original sin. All men are sinful. Therefore, we are not threatened when we say that there is medication available that helps people get their behavior under control. And therefore, a pastor can hear the news that mental illnesses can be medically caused and that medication can help them, and with confidence refer his people to a psychiatrist. Now, a psychiatrist is a medical doctor and will help work with the family to get the specifics of the illness down and get the correct medication, which is an art. It's an art to doing that, both a science and an art. And with that, then the pastor can work with the family to rebuild lives, giving them the knowledge that Jesus is their Savior and that he loves them and he will help them through this crisis.
You mentioned before the break that shedding the erroneous notions about mental illness can help the church deal with the family and the person, not in terms of law, but in terms of the gospel. What do you mean by that?
Well, the brain is broken. The brain and the body both can be broken. And therefore, we have had a tendency in some of our communities, if a person doesn't behave the way we want to blame them and use law to exclude them. Sometimes mental illness, people will, in their desperation to feel better, will use alcohol and they will use drugs because some of these things temporarily help them feel better, and so they get themselves into even more problems. I think when we come at them and say, look, you really have a medical problem that you need to seek help for, that alone is so healing when they understand that, and then you can work with rebuilding lives.
Folks, if you have a question or a comment on mental illness, feel free to give us a call at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, because we know people are also listening on the internet. Give us a call at 1-800-730-2727 if you need to. We'll let you stay on the line to hear the response to your question or your comment. We're talking about Christians and mental illness with Linda Preuss. Linda, the thing you mentioned about original sin, and you and I have had a previous conversation about this, and that stuck in my mind because it seems that for some reason we have assumed, well, in a fallen world, there will be cancer. There will be diabetes. There will be all manner of disease that we think of as afflicting the body. And yet we have excluded, as you said at the very beginning of our conversation, the notion that the brain could be affected. We felt that it was somehow immune from all these things. Does our fallen state affect even our mental well-being?
Absolutely. It definitely affects our mental well-being. What we're finding is that the brain is a tremendously complex organ that really does produce a lot of our good judgment, a lot of our happy feelings, a lot of our abilities to function. And when a person doesn't have those things, like for instance, when a person doesn't have enough serotonin, they're going to feel depressed. When a person has too much dopamine, they are going to have delusions and they hear voices and things are going to happen to them that doesn't happen to other people. And so it's very much a brain chemistry type of situation that we are looking into and researching.
Again, if you would like to call in anonymously, we understand the sensitive nature of the subject. Feel free to do so. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. With her follow-up question, Kathy from St. Charles is back on the line. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you for taking my second call. Is there an understanding of crossover with other medical conditions that can contribute or play a role in a patient's mental illness? For example, celiac sprue. I know patients that are on a low-gluten diet. It's a condition that causes malabsorption of nutrients. In Europe, they've done a lot of research on this, and apparently, you know, there are higher rates of bipolar and schizophrenia in the celiac population than in those who are non-celiac. And it's because we're not receiving the brain chemicals just as well as, you know, vitamin C and those type of things. They're not receiving because of the malabsorption. Is there an understanding of some of this in our country? I know there is in Europe, but it doesn't seem like I've heard a lot about it here.
Kathy, stay on the line there, please.
Yes, I agree with you. We don't hear a lot about it. And there is, for instance, the thyroid also can be responsible for causing depression. Mm-hmm. There just needs to be a lot more research and information about these things.
Because sometimes they're treating the symptom of those mental illness, and it's not going to be as effective because they're not going to the root of the problem.
Right. Yeah. And I
saw this in my mother.
Right. And some of the medications, unfortunately, have some pretty terrible side effects. I mean, the weight gain is horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
There's sexual dysfunction. I mean, no wonder people quit taking their medicine. So I do wholeheartedly support a full person approach to doing everything that we can to keep people healthy. I mean, you know, good eating habits, exercise, good spiritual habits, and more research into the various connection between, you know, what we eat and breathe and all, and how that affects us physically.
Kathy, thank you very much for giving us a call back there. Mm-hmm. It raises another question, and that has to do with the general attitude of the church toward mental illness and what a person who suffers from, let's just say, in the case of clinical depression, might perceive when they walk into a church on a Sunday morning and everyone's clapping and the music is loud, or someone with a more serious mental illness who enters that and finds it, frankly, terrifying, as opposed to a church where, when one enters, there's a quietness, there's a constancy, and there's a confession of sin straight to the heart of the problem.
Right.
Is this an issue?
Oh, I think absolutely. One thing, I think it's unfortunate that a lot of our churches are concentrating on how people feel. And one thing we know as Lutherans is our faith does not depend upon how we feel about it. It depends upon what the Word of God says to us and what Jesus Christ on the cross has done for us. And so whether or not we feel good or feel bad does not affect what Jesus has done and said to us. And that is that He loves us, He forgives us, that He will care for us and take us to heaven, regardless of how good or bad we're feeling. And I think that's a treasure that we have in the Lutheran Church, that we don't connect our feelings to our faith.
It is a sad note of Christian history that very often, because of misunderstanding, mental illness was either chalked up to the demonic or to some sort of moral or spiritual failing in the person themselves. Have we completely rid ourselves in the 21st century as Christians of that, at least the vestiges of that idea?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think there seems to be the appearance of evil. And I don't know exactly what part evil, you know, and sin in all of this plays. What I do know is that God, in His mercy, is providing education and support and help for people with severe mental illness, and they don't need to suffer as much as they have in the past.
To the Christian pastor who says, look, I would like to be able to help people because I know I've got depressed people in my congregation, or manic, or I've got people who may even have more serious disorders like schizophrenia or something like that, but I'm in over my head. You know, I'm just your average Joe pastor. What would you say to him?
I would say to definitely get in contact with the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, because they can give you the best information that is available. You can, that is a secular organization that will simply educate people about mental illness and give them the support they need. It does not deal at all with the person's values. It's just a matter of the latest research and the newest information that we have on mental illness. And so they can, with confidence, refer their people to that organization.
What would you suggest, I mean, beyond getting specifics to a certain case, what would you suggest a pastor do, because his tendency is to want to help?
Right.
But sometimes that tendency among pastors to want to help would discourage him from referring something beyond. He says, I got to be able to take care of this.
No, I mean, I think that we need to recognize that there are some situations where a pastor needs to function as a gatekeeper. He needs to give his people permission to see a psychiatrist. There is no shame involved in this. These are medical doctors. They are not a psychologist is something different and can be very helpful with people who are just the worried well. They're normal people that have a problem that can benefit from counseling, but severe mental illness does not fit into that category. These people need the help from a psychiatrist, and we need to give our people permission to seek psychiatric help.
We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Linda Preuss is our guest. She's a board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. Before the hour is out, I will repeat their phone number and their website for you. She also leads a support group every second Thursday of the month at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere, Missouri. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We have a car phone caller on the line. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Pastor. Earlier this year, my brother committed suicide, and there seemed to be no signs, no symptoms. Can someone mask something like this to where you can't tell?
Yes, they can. They do actually. I mean, schizophrenia is 1 in 100 people. I think that statistic would surprise a lot of people, and yet they are able many times to mask what is going on, and only a trained person may be able to really pick up what is happening inside of them.
Now, when you say mask this, you mentioned before that sometimes the mentally ill are not aware of the fact that they have a mental disorder.
Yes.
And that might lead people to worry. Well, golly, you know, there are times when I feel low, and then there are times when I feel like I can take on the world. Do I have bipolar disorder? Since it's not an obvious thing either sometimes to the person or to the rest of the family, how is one to judge in that case?
Well, the definition, you know, we're using a definition of severe mental illness as one that is severely disruptive to the person's functioning and to their relationships around them. I mean, we all have mood quirks and things that, you know, are different about us, possibly even eccentric. But have we destroyed our family relationships? You know, are we getting somewhere in life? So mental illness is a diagnosis from 5 different categories: physical, mood, thinking, behavior, senses. And so it's a number of characteristics that fit into a pattern. And it really should be diagnosed by a competent person. But family members, you know, sometimes they suspect this and can be gatekeepers to getting people help.
Let's go back to the phones. A caller from Illinois is on the line. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
I recognize the name. I went to school with Jack and Rolf Preuss.
Yes.
But I haven't heard you speak. I just caught the show as I was coming out of work. And it's very interesting, and I very much appreciate it being aired on KFUO because it's so very important.
Well, my husband is Daniel.
Okay. All right. I recognize the name also.
Did you have a question?
Well, as far as manic depression, bipolar disorder, and in dealing with that, I'd like you to speak a little bit on that. I have, for the last 3 years... with my wife, I've been doing all the research with Mental Health Association. I'm always looking for other avenues. Unfortunately, it has come to a situation where I can no longer financially, emotionally, or physically deal with it anymore. There has been suicide threats, suicide attempts, and she doesn't even recognize any of these situations. Once in the manic state, behavior becomes so bizarre. Some of it is remembered, some of it is not, and then once they start phasing back into a normal phase, that they become so depressed over things that they realize that they've done, that they remember that they've done, and then you have to deal with that.
Right.
It's been very, very hard.
Let's see what Linda has to say. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Yes. For spouses living with a person who has bipolar, it's extremely difficult. Many times because people think they may have caused it, whereas really you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. I think that that's why I'm encouraging people, you know, to get in contact with the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, because there you will find other people who are going through similar experiences, and you can learn better coping skills. I mean, our support group that we have on Thursday nights once a month, it's designed to meet together for families and share experiences and try to teach each other and learn skills that help in coping with these situations. It is really hard, especially when a person is untreated. So if I could just encourage you by saying you're not alone. There are people out there, and if you would be interested in learning more about that, then please contact the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Our phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll try and continue to take your phone calls here throughout the rest of the hour, but our time is running short, and we do have a couple more questions. Harold is calling from St. Charles. Harold, welcome to Issues Etc.
Yes, indeed. You know, as we talked about the psychiatrist a while ago, I have no doubt in my mind that there are some good psychiatrists with Christian backgrounds in that. But down through the years, you know, we've heard about the godlessness of some of these people. Now, they may be able to diagnose what's wrong, but when they come up with recommendations, and that look out. Now, maybe you've discussed that earlier on the program.
There. Let's see what Linda has to say. Thank you, Harold. I know that you have said, you've spoken well of the psychiatrists, the medical doctors who deal with the medicinal end of this. But what of psychologists? I think that's probably what troubles Harold a little bit more.
Right. Well, and psychiatrists, too. You do have to be careful that a person is working from a knowledgeable medical basis, and not with old models. A psychiatrist should be a person, like, you don't ask a doctor who's going to fix your appendix whether he's a Christian or not, if you're an emergency appendix, if you need an emergency appendectomy. A psychiatrist should not be working with the person's values. They should be working with the medical. But when you come to psychology, that's a different discipline altogether. And there, you do have to be careful that a person, like, it can be extremely harmful for a truly mentally ill person to delve back into their past. They have false memories. Their memories can be distorted. They have perceptions that will not be at all helpful in a treatment going forward. So, yes, when you choose a counselor, and I want to say that good counseling can be very helpful in rebuilding the life, but you do need to be very careful that that person is operating with the same values that you hold dear.
Let's go back to the phones. Calling from Illinois, we have a listener on the line. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Linda. I have a question for you. We have a family member that went for a regular checkup to a new doctor, and they gave her Zoloft, and she has had a complete 360 reversal of her personality. And we've been taking her to a psychiatrist without any luck. And we wondered if this can be permanent damage, or if you've heard of this and if it's ever correctable. Would you please answer, and I'll get back to the radio.
Now, let me ask you one question before we let you go. Was this family member depressed before?
No.
No.
No, just seemingly nervous a little bit because of being with a new doctor.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Linda.
Well, I want to stress that I am not a medical professional, and so I really am not capable of answering that question. I think the brain has tremendous capability of repatterning itself, and so I like to think that nothing is ever permanent. This is an art, and it indicates the importance of family involvement. A psychiatrist is actually required by his diagnostic tool to take into account other people's opinions. He may not be able to speak to them, but he has to listen to what they say. So I would definitely express your concerns to the psychiatrist you're working with, and hopefully get some more information from that person.
Does it concern you at all that it appears that with regard to depression and antidepressants, more and more people are taking antidepressants?
Yes, it does concern me to a certain extent. And I do think that there, as far as depression, there are some very helpful books, like David Byrne's book, Mood Therapy, is a very helpful book on cognitive therapy. Again, for people who are part of the worried well. But this is, I guess, where we need to trust the people that we're working with and just get educated.
Linda, if someone says at church that someone who's mentally ill has something wrong with their faith, this is a deficiency of faith, how would you respond to that?
Well, I guess it's as much a deficiency of faith as anybody who has epilepsy or diabetes. I mean, we would never say that about, or a person who has heart disease. It just simply is not true. It's an untrue statement. It's sad.
Linda Preuss, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues Etc. Linda Preuss is board member for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri, and she also leads a support group every second Thursday of the month at St. Paul Lutheran Church in De Pere, Missouri. From the fact that, you know, during the 3 o'clock hour, we don't generally take a lot of calls. And yet, we just open a conversation on mental illness and we start getting calls from people. It tells me this is something that needs to be discussed, especially in the context of good, sound Christian theology. Understanding that this is part and parcel of living in the fallen world, and while never asked for and never desired, it, like many of the other maladies that our sin has brought upon us as fallen creatures, has an ultimate solution. But this ultimate solution doesn't necessarily mean that we cannot find help along the way. The ultimate solution, of course, is in the resurrection, when at the end Christ restores all things, the whole creation anew, and all of these maladies that we have brought upon us by our sin are gone. But in the meantime, he has also given us the wisdom of doctors and of medicine, of research, and the medicines that we are finding that help people along the way with these diseases and all others like them, so that the church can continue with its message, the promise and the hope of Christ and the new creation he has brought by his death and resurrection. I'd like you to support the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of St. Louis by pledging a donation for their walk that's coming up on May the 10th. Give them a call. Their number, 314-996-4670, 314-996-4670. It is a great cause. Call 966-4670, or check out their website at namistl.org, namistl.org. We'll be right back for the second hour of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.